Okay, good. Seems like everybody can hear me. I'm stuck with just this one mic here, so I'm going to have to stay around this area. If you folks are ready, we can get started. Okay, cool. So my name is Santosh Panchap, and I'm here to talk to you about how you can get your next great app jump-started this hackathon. So we've seen Kathy talk about Windows 8, the platform, and she showcased a couple of really neat features with Windows Store applications. Bear spoke about how you can integrate with Facebook, and Jaime showed you how you can build a Windows Store app using JavaScript, CSS, and HTML. This talk is going to be the same, but it's going to be in how you can use XAML and C# to do the same. So just to make sure I get a feel for what the audience is like, how many of you folks are familiar with XAML and have at least seen one code file of XAML? Okay, I think around 50%. So for the other 50%, XAML, what is it? How many of you think it's the name of an animal, which sounds like the camel? One. Okay, for the rest of you, you're very close. So XAML is the Extensible Application Markup Language. It's a language that was built by Microsoft, but is now open specification, so you should not just see it with Microsoft. It allows designers to design controls and the user interface while allowing programmers to do the code behind. So if you're working in a team and you want to build an application that has, you know, most applications have a front end and have the code behind, then designers would get to work using a tool like Expression Blend. They would write the user interface using XAML, which is primarily XML based, and programmers would write the code behind in C# or another managed language. The code you write with XAML produces a partial class. So you can't instantiate it by itself. And the code you write in managed code is also a partial class. So you bring them both together, and now you have a user interface along with the code behind. So that's the perhaps the world's quickest introduction to XAML. And in the next 30 or so minutes, my goal is to show you some XAML code, some C# code, so that you have a good reference point for this hackathon. So this is not like a end-to-end tutorial. This is not going to be very step-by-step. It's going to be, here's an interesting feature. The feature is, let's say, snapped views. The feature might be semantic zoom. How is it actually implemented in the code? And since I'm going to hop around the code a lot, I hope that doesn't make it more disconcerting. But the point I'm trying to make is that all the code is there in the sample. I'm going to try to speak to parts of it so that when you refer to it tonight or tomorrow, you have the concepts behind those codes pretty clear. Okay, the demo app I'm going to use is Contoso Cookbook, and you've seen Jaime put this up. He showed you a couple of features. What we will do is look at a feature and then look at the code behind for it. These are the features that we will look at. We'll start out with typical controls. List views, grid views, how do you do the data binding behind them, how do you do the templating. How many in the room are familiar with the concept of data binding? Okay, that's 80%. What about templating controls? Let's say about 40%. So typically when you have a user interface and you have data, it's the landscape looks like this. You've got data sitting somewhere. Let's say it's on a file, it might be in a database. It might be from a web service. You've got a layer of abstraction, and then that data is made available to your app. So you have this data abstraction layer which consumes the data and then instantiates it in, let's say, an in-memory object. So you have this object which has the data that you want to present to the user. Now, you want to map this data to a control on the screen. So if I quickly switch to the app here, I've got the... Okay, it's not showing up. Let's see if it shows up now. Okay, shows up now. So what I see right now is information, data that is manifested through a bunch of controls. So I have images here, I've got text boxes. I've got these controls which are bound to a object. So there's an object in memory which says, this is my picture, this is my title, and I should be able to, let's say I have a text box here, I change the content in the text box, it changes it on the object. Similarly, if the object were to change, it would reflect on the UI. That is the concept of data binding. The concept of item templating is where I specify that for each object in my list, the template for the UI has to be, in this case, an image. On top of that image, I want you to overlay a short a title here, a text block. So that is the item template. And this is what is typically done in the XAML world, even in the JavaScript world, as you've seen Jaime demonstrate. Okay, so let's quickly look through the code to get this working. So what I have open right now is Visual Studio. Typically, if you have a team that's a designer team, they'd be working on it in Blend. I put a couple of bookmarks here within my code so that we can walk through it. When you looked at the Contoso cookbook app, it had a structure, right? This is a small part of that structure you can see on the screen. I've got a layout here. I've got something like a row header. That header contains a button. It contains text. I've got a group of items here, a group of items with a button on top. And I can actually interact with that button. So if I was to click on this group here, I can dive into that control. So how is that actually represented in XAML? So essentially, I have a grid, and I'm defining that this grid has two rows, one row of size 140 pixels, the other row takes the rest of the space. I'm then saying that I'm specifying what should be included as part of the header for that row. And that essentially is I want a button, which is here, that's the button. I want a page title, which is a text block. And to incorporate Facebook code, I also have a stack panel, which essentially is an image and a profile name, which I get from Facebook. Now, each of the items themselves, the items here that show up in this block, are coming from a view model. So that's essentially coming from my data abstraction layer. I have a view model that I'm connecting to. So that's what I'm saying, that's what this code essentially says. It says that I want a virtualizing stack panel which lays out the individual items horizontally. And I'm specifying that for each group here, because we've got a collection of recipes, recipes from China, recipes from India and so on, each of them has a group title. So here's where I specify that I need a button on top. And then I've got the list of items right after that. So what I've done so far is I've defined the user interface. I now need to specify that user interface has to be bound to data, to a data object. So that's what I'm doing right here. I'm saying that for this grid view, the item source is defined by this collection right here, grouped items view source. Let's see how that gets populated. So I'm defining a default view model for this page. The layout aware page is a control that you get with Windows 8, which essentially is aware of the current layout. So if I was to turn my Windows 8 device, it will send me events, and I can react to change in orientation. That's why it's called a layout aware page. So I'm putting my controls within it so that I can react to it. And I'm specifying that the data context for the items that are embedded within this page is coming from my default view model. And I will set the data for my default view model right here. So I have a dictionary. I'm saying that all items that I'm loading within the dictionary key groups has this data, and this is the object that I was speaking about in memory. So sample data groups is what I have loaded from a file. So what we've seen so far is I've got data that comes to my data object, and then it's being mapped to a user interface. So the next piece is the item template. This is where I specify the view of each of the underlying items here, because I might have just one recipe or 10 or 15 recipes, but it has to replicate this user interface for that recipe item across the number of recipes that I have. So that's what I'm saying right here. I have a standard 250 by 250 item template. Use it for each of these objects. And that's defined like so. I have a border, I have an image, and then I have a stack panel within it. So what we've seen so far is the XAML, the extensible application markup language, that has defined the user interface, that has done the data binding, that has done the item templating. So is this helpful? Is walking through and jumping through this code helpful? Let me show with a show of hands. Because if it's too disconcerting, then we'll just switch to concepts. Okay, so I see about 30%. Okay. So next on our list is responding to changes in orientation. When I turn my device, the layout aware page detects that, and then it passes the events on to me. So within XAML, I can define unique visual states, and I can define animation, so that I can say that the state of so-and-so control must be, let's say, highlighted. It must become bigger, smaller. In this case, what I'm specifying is that when the visual state is full screen portrait mode, then I want the back button to have a certain property, and that is, I want to change its style. I want to change the way it looks. Similarly, I'm saying that the padding, the space between the border and the items themselves should have a different value. And this is triggered when I'm in full screen or portrait mode. So similarly, I can define additional visual state groups so that I can react to snapped view, I can react to other changes in orientation. There's the concept of semantic zoom. So this is my list of items. I can pinch and zoom out, and what I have right here is a different rendering of the same information. We call it semantic zoom because it's not just optical, it's not just I'm looking at it from a greater distance. Instead, I'm changing the layout of the individual items. So the way we do this is you essentially write the XAML for semantic zoom in and semantic zoom out. In other words, my page identifies, it figures out when I'm zoomed in, and then it renders a certain XAML. It identifies when I'm zoomed out, and it renders a different XAML. So this is very similar to what we've seen so far. Here I have the semantic zoom control, and this control detects the gestures for zooming in and zooming out. Depending on the current state, it will render the corresponding XAML, which is what we see right here. So that's the XAML for zoom out and for zoom in, and this is the XAML for zoom out. Conceptually, it's all the same. I've got a grid. Within the grid, I have a margin for each of the items. I have image, text block, and so on. Yes, go ahead. Yes. So the question was, can you have the same name for the different controls? So if you want to uniquely reach out to any of the controls, you'll need to have a unique name for that, which is what I have here. So this is group grid view, which is what I use for the zoomed out view, and item grid view, which I use for the zoomed in view. So if I have the same name, then there will be some ambiguity there, so that will actually cause a compilation error. Okay, so the question was, if you have a different data source, and you want to use, so in that case, I'm sorry, could you?
I have one, the same data source.
Yeah.
So if I have two different controls, I have to define data
Yeah, so if you have the same data source and you want to map it to multiple controls, you can do that. You just specify what it's bound to. In this case, I've set my data context at a parent level, which is at the page level. And then each of the items here can reference that data source. I don't need to have...
So you mentioned that add new item event.
Add new item event, okay. So if you I think that the question is you want to bind two controls to the same code. So you essentially so in this case I say item click equals item click one, which is the code behind. So yes, in this case I can write another control which points to that same code behind. So I can have two buttons which could be named differently, but behind the scenes it calls the same block of code. So the question is, can there be multiple levels of semantic zoom? The controls we give you are just one level of semantic zoom. I believe you can theoretically add additional levels of semantic zoom, but you should think about why you would do that and think about it from the perspective of the consumer who is seeing many, many Windows 8 store apps. They have a certain expectation of semantic zoom, so I would not stray too far away from that. Yes. The standard for semantic zoom is just is two levels. Okay, next on the list is app bar, flyouts, and capturing media. So the concept of an app bar is what shows up either on the top or at the bottom when you swipe on your Windows 8 device. This is where I put in my controls. So I've got five buttons here: brag, pin, reminder, post, like. And I've created this app bar dynamically. We'll quickly look through the code behind for that. So I have a native control called the page bottom app bar. Here's where I define it. I say that I've got an app bar, and then I define the layout for that app bar. So I'm saying that I need two columns in my app bar, and then I'm going to insert the UI controls within it. And in this case, they're all buttons. I specify what code should be called when each of these buttons are clicked. And going back to the previous point, they can all call the same code block as well. So here's the code that is called when the brag button is clicked. Let's see how that has been mapped to. This is the brag button. I'm defining it here. I'm giving it a UI property saying that align it to the left. Here's the style I want you to use. There are a lot of predefined styles that we give you, so you don't have to be a designer. If you want typical styles, you just pick up on whatever is part of the standard Windows templates when you create a new project. And here I'm saying that the code that you should run when this is clicked is the on drag button clicked. And this is where I define the code. Now what I want to do is dynamically create controls on top of that, because what's happening here is I get a pop-up where I can select one among many. So in this case, there's video, there could be photo, there could be whatever. So what I'm showing you right here is how you would dynamically add more controls. This is actually leveraging a open source control library called Callisto. If you go to GitHub, you can download and install it. It's not part of the native platform yet, but it will be at some point. So I'm creating a new flyout, specifying where and how it should be placed. And then I also specify the event handler for when the control is invoked. So in this case, I'm saying that when the button is tapped, I want you to run this code. Essentially, this is like a function pointer. And then I specify what that code is. Just a couple of lines to capture a stream from your camera. I'm using the camera capture UI, and in a couple of lines I get a stream, and I can save it as a file. Okay, next on the list is contracts. How many of you are familiar with contracts? Okay, I got totally familiar with contracts when I bought my house. I had this 35-page document, which I didn't care to read because I couldn't. Contracts in Windows 8 are much simpler, and you need to know them, because without following the right contracts, Windows will not recognize what you're doing. Let's look at an example. When I swipe from the side of the screen, this is all operating system functionality. I can click on search, I can click on share, and what's happening here is it is calling onto my app, and it's asking my app, what do I want to share? And it does that by establishing contract. So in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say share. Now that calls my app. My app says, yes, I've got stuff to share, and then I can share it. What my app is sharing is it's saying that I've got stuff, like I've got text for you, I've got an image, and this sample out here is actually rendering it for me. So if you're familiar with the concept of mashups, you've got an app which has data, you've got another app which can consume data, and you can chain these apps together. Now, we don't allow you to chain multiple apps, but we allow your app to specify what it has to share. So maybe you've got text, you've got image. There's a whole bunch of items, that data types that you can share. And then the listener apps, the consumer apps, can actually speak up when the OS has such information. So if the OS says, I've got an app who wants to share a text, which of the apps in the operating system are ready to consume it? Those apps then establish that relationship. And that all happens behind the scenes through contracts. So let's look at a example here. There is the concept of a data transfer manager. This is just a class that you get with Windows runtime. And I'm saying, I'm invoking the data transfer manager, and I'm asking it to give me an instance for my current view, which is for my app. And I'm saying that anytime the user requests data, anytime the a user uses the charms and says share, then I have an event handler for it, so call me. And that's when I actually package up the information that I want to share. So the operating system has called my app and it says, here's a big bucket, fill it up with what you want to share. I then go ahead and I fill it up. I fill it up with text, I fill it up with images, and then I hand it back to the operating system, which then passes that message to the other apps on the system, and then they establish a connection. Okay, the other items on this list, I'm not going to jump through the code, but we can go through it during the hackathon. Azure Mobile Services, most apps in today's world have some sort of a web service backend. Azure Mobile Services makes it really easy for you to store data on the web. You could have it on a SQL database, you could store blobs. I'll show you how to store a picture on Azure Mobile Services and then link to it from a Facebook post in a moment. Live tiles and question.
So, like this for sharing, is it only like putting out stuff, or can you like request say, can say I want, I know I have an app that can read, say, barcodes, and I would like to, you know, is there any app out there that can, you know, read a barcode and
Okay, so the question, as I understand it, is there a way in which I can define what I can consume as a consumer app, and then request for it? There is a way in which you can define the data types that you can share and that you can consume, but you cannot actively request for that information. The way sharing is triggered is when the user invokes the operating system, the charms bar, and says, I want to share this explicitly. There is the concept of protocol handlers, where you have one app which explicitly says, I want to call this other app and pass this data to it. but we don't have a mechanism where you can proactively request for that data. Yes, question.
You mentioned the sharing with the operating system, but I don't see anything which can share directly with Facebook. It mentioned email and stuff like that, but let's say the picture, if you just put operating system share button, does it directly post to the Facebook? Can you do that?
Yeah, so the question is, why don't I see Facebook? What if I have another app? When I swipe from the right, I see a bunch of choices. Yes, you can see any app which consumes that data. Let's just say that I've built an app which posts data on Facebook. And I tell the operating system, I declare that I'm a share target. Reach out to me anytime you've got text and you've got an image. Now, if there is any app that somebody builds someday which says that I've got, the user has text and image to share, then my app responds to that and says, give it to me, I'm going to put it on Facebook. Now the user from that list on the side, he would see your that app here. He would see my app. Here, share target C# sample has registered as a consumer for that data type. SkyDrive has registered as a consumer. And they all do different things with the information. So that Facebook app could very well say, I'm going to put it on Facebook, give me that information.
So on top of that, if there is an application, say Instagram, which took the picture and shared it on Facebook, so I need to have two different applications for that. I cannot integrate into one application saying that, hey, you take a picture from this app, this is a share button, operating system share button, directly go to the Facebook. But for, as you mentioned, I have to create a different app, which gives to that different app, and that will
not sure I understand. So is it about chaining data across multiple apps? Is that your question?
Yes. So basically you mentioned that for posting this picture, say this picture to the Facebook, I need to give this picture to a different app on the right-hand side, which consumes it and
yes,
publish it to the Facebook. So I need to create two different applications, right?
You don't need to. So the question is, if I want to post a picture to Facebook in this example, do I need to create two different apps? In the world of mashups, this is very similar. I don't really know tomorrow's app. Somebody's going to build an app tomorrow which consumes the same data and does something very interesting with it. I'm a publisher app, and all I'm telling you is that I'm going to give you text, I'm going to give you an image, do whatever. Tomorrow somebody comes up with Instagram, an Instagram app, and says, if you ever have an image to share, give it to me, I'll do something cool with it. Somebody will come up with a Facebook-like app which says, give it to me, I'm going to put it on Facebook. So we don't really, it's not, it's dynamic in the sense that it's not built for hard-coded apps, chained apps, it's just open. Okay, live tiles and push notifications. This is a very neat aspect of Windows. I totally love this. So what you see here is that these tiles are actually updating. And if you write an app and you have a web service on the back end, it's really cool to be able to publish notifications to your user. So there's a bunch of entities here that come into play. There is your user, there's your user's device, and there's the session on that device. And there is your application. There's also your web service, and there's the Windows notification service. All these components have to talk to make this magic work. So let's say I'm building this cool app that is a shopping app, and every Christmas or every 3 months, I've got these new hot deals that I want to show. So I have my web service, and I've got my app on the user's device. I want to be able to publish a message to it, and as part of that message, I want to give them an image, I want to give it perhaps a badge, I want to give it text. So how does this interplay work? The way it works is your app will request Windows for a notification channel. That notification channel will uniquely identify your app on that device for that user. Because Windows 8 supports multi-login. I can log out and log in as a different identity. So you want to have a unique channel to that user, app, device. The local notification host then talks to Windows Notification Services, which lives on the cloud, gives it back a unique key. Now your app has a key that it can use to send messages. Your app then hands this over to your web service. In my case, my shopping web service, which is sitting on a server somewhere, let's say Amazon or let's say Azure Mobile Services, it's sitting on that on my cloud. Now, when I have new data to send, to transmit, that web service will call on that channel, which essentially is a HTTP call, and as part of that payload, include the data that must be rendered. So that's how it all works behind the scenes.
Yes, question. Google Cloud Messaging instead of the Microsoft. You are describing a push messages, right?
Yes.
So instead of using a Microsoft, what would you suggest? Can I use GCM instead of that?
So the question is, instead of using Windows Notification Services, can you use Google Cloud Messaging or a different notification mechanism? I don't think you can have a direct notification channel, but what you can do is build layers on top. So there's, if you've heard of Urban Airship tries to give you a unified notification channel across the different platforms. They can also target Windows, but at the lowest level, you wouldn't replace Windows notification with Google Cloud Messaging.
So it's more like an Apple, right? Because they don't allow GCM. So are you trying to say that it's same because they also block GCM?
To my knowledge, yes, that is the case. Yeah, so the question was, on Windows Phone, you have the feature where your local app can change the tile. Is that true on Windows 8 as well? Yes, it is. So you can change the tile either from your local app. It runs and says, change the tile now. You can have a scheduled change, which says that after, let's say, 30 minutes, change the tile. Or you can do a push notification from the remote service, which, in my mind, is the most interesting aspect. The question is, how long can the background agent, how often will it run? Yeah, so the question is, if I want to update the tile every X seconds, every 5 minutes. We'll need to get into the specifics, which I'm not very clear about, but from a user experience standpoint, this is not a messaging system. This is not like me sending you an IM. It's not like me telling you the latest stock price for a certain stock. It's not meant for that. We don't give you a specific SLA for your message will be delivered within this specific period of time. We limit the number of tiles you can post. So let's say you can queue up 5 tiles and we will cycle between those 5 tiles. If you queue up another, then the first one is dropped out. Similarly with toasts, we allow you to do just one. With toasts, it has to be more time sensitive. So if a toast was pushed a long time ago, it might not. I think it's more than a day or something. It might not really reflect because it's not really relevant to the user any longer. So there is guidance on that. I don't remember off the top of my mind. Yeah, so the question is, let's say I've got an app, I don't have a back-end web service. This app is doing its own web request, does its own calls, and it wants to update the tile. Is it possible? So as Jaime mentioned, typically if your app goes into the background, it essentially doesn't get any more CPU. Now you can request for background tasks, but I haven't seen it used in such a way where you can essentially have it running all the time. I expect there are restrictions on that. I should be able to get back to you on this as to what's possible later today or tomorrow. Okay. Next on the list is monetizing your app. So through the hackathon, I can show you some sample code for this. But with Windows 8 Store apps, you get a lot of options. You have the concept of a free app. You have a free app with advertising. You've got trials for the limited, let's say, trials based on time. You can run the app for a certain period of time. Trials based on functionality. So you've got certain functionality that you can use. And if you want to expand that, you pay money. And there are ways in which you can simulate app purchases. There's a class called the current app, which you can query, and it gives you licensing information like what's the app identifier, how has it been licensed, what features have been licensed, and so on. You would essentially interact with this to turn on and off features in your app. And there is Microsoft opens up to third party. Okay, that's not part of my deck. So you can have third-party payment platforms as well, such as integrating with PayPal, and in which case you essentially interact directly with that payment system. You don't have to go through the Microsoft Store. Okay, so let's look through some code on integrating with Facebook now. So what I have here is I've put a control to post on my wall to like an item, and I also have the ability to log in to Facebook, and in doing so I actually personalize my experience. So let's say I want to post an item. The first thing, so I can post a picture of a recipe I've taken, or I can say I like this item and I want to post it onto my wall. The first thing it does is it wants to authenticate you through the web authentication broker. And the concept here is that when you're building an app, you don't want to ask the user with your own user interface, give me your user ID and your password for Facebook or for Gmail or for Microsoft, because most users feel very uncomfortable giving their credentials to a third party. In today's world, these identities span multiple web services. I can log in to my computer with my Microsoft account, my Hotmail account, and so it's disconcerting, because as a user, if your application is compromised, my entire digital experience on the web is compromised. The web authentication broker inserts itself in between. It's a operating system level component. Anything I type within here is not visible to the app. So let's say I'm writing an app and I need your credentials. I will call the web authentication broker, I'll pass it a redirect URI, and if you're familiar with open authorization, then it goes through the open authorization process, and then I'm able to query back the access token as part of that. So here I'm going to log in with my test account. And right now it's actually gone and posted that. So I'm going to go back here. This is not me, by the way, because I don't look like that. But that's a test account, because I've been posting a whole bunch of stuff here. So 3 seconds ago, posted and liked. Now, we looked through the code as to what's happening here. But behind the scenes, I'm taking the picture, the image. I'm hosting it on Azure Mobile Services. And I'll show you how that's done. And then I'm putting a new post onto Facebook, and I'm linking to that. So here are the scopes I'm requesting. For Facebook, when you're building a C# application, there is a C# library which essentially wraps all the REST calls, so it makes it easier for you. I'm asking for these scopes, and then I'm specifying a redirect URL which the web authentication broker now has to keep track of, and it will signal when it gets to this URL. If it gets to this URL, then I know that I have succeeded in authenticating and authorizing access. So here I'm using the API, the library, to actually compose that URL, the login URL, and I pass it these parameters. I call the web authentication broker. And then if the return is a success, what that means is that I can extract the access token. So I extract the access token. With the access token, I'm able to query additional information. For instance, what I'm going to do is, now that I have the access token, the user has authorized me to have a look at the user's information. So I'm going to query for the user's picture and name information. So within my app, I now have my picture and name at the top right. So that's how I get that. Here's how I'm actually posting. I've got this one method which does both posting and liking. Essentially, if you like an item, what I do is I post the image to Facebook and then I like that so that it's within the graph, the Facebook graph. I check if I'm logged in. If I'm not logged in, I log in. I create a new item, and I've defined this item here. This item is essentially a wrapper for my Azure mobile services data. Now, when I'm dealing with Azure, I can store data in a database. I have the concept of blobs. When I'm storing an image, I don't store this image within my database. I don't have a column for it. What I instead do is I get a unique ID, a unique identifier for it, and that serves as a key, a primary key into a different table, into a blob storage. So for each entry, I am going to specify item name. I'm going to specify a container, which is my blob container. And I'm specifying what I'm calling a SAS token. It's a unique token for the image that I'm posting, because I'll have multiple posts and multiple likes. I then do an insert. Now, when I call this insert, it is inserting that item onto Azure. There is a server-side JavaScript script that runs, and I can show that to you during the hackathon if you're interested, which essentially says, okay, that's the item name stored in this column. The container is, this is the name of the container. This is the, so stored in this column. And now it generates a token which will uniquely identify the destination for this image. And it gives that back to me. So I then extract that token here, and I use that to upload my image back onto Azure. So here's where I upload it, and the URL I'm uploading to is composed with the unique token, the unique URI that is given back to me from Azure. So now that it's on Azure and I have the URL to it, I just use the Facebook SDK, which is very straightforward because it's hiding all the REST calls behind the scenes. And I specify parameters. I give it, I tell it with the link to the images and text that I want to post. So that's essentially the run through of how you can integrate with Facebook. And this is all in the sample code that Kathy mentioned, so you should have access to it. Okay, last slide. So the entire purpose of my talk today was that if you're thinking of building an app within the next 24 hours, chances are you will want to refer existing code. The Contoso Cookbook app is a great start. In fact, it's a hands-on lab. So what that means is you can run through step-by-step instructions. It will explain to you what the code is, and it will run through everything we've just gone over. And you can tweak it for your own application. So use that app to jumpstart your hackathon. There's a bunch of links to the step-by-step lab, the C# SDK, Azure Mobile Services, and the Callisto library. And we're all here to help you get jumpstarted, so please reach out to us. Okay, if anybody's still awake, questions?
Can you upload videos to the services Azure service?
So the question was, can you upload videos to Azure service? And the answer is yes, pretty much any blob. Now, there is a pricing structure involved, but as of today, Azure will allow you to dev test against it free for 90 days. And at that point, you will incur charges based on the actual data transfer. Yes, question.
Is there a way to someone is already logged in, you are still having an application to be logged in.
So the question is there a way to avoid having the user to re-log in if they've already logged in to, let's say, Facebook? So authentication is an interesting space. At this time, Microsoft account is the only identity that is recognized by the operating system. What that means is if I log in to the session, to the Windows session with my Microsoft identity or a domain account which is connected to a Microsoft account, then that identity is at the operating system level. So any app that I have already given access to can automatically log in. So the experience is, let's say I take a new Windows machine, I log in with my Microsoft account. When I start up, the apps don't have access to my Microsoft account because that's a privacy thing. But I can launch the app and I can say, I go ahead and give it permission, and then the next time I log in, it already has access. It has the necessary scopes, has the OAuth token. Now, the other identities like Google, Facebook don't fall into that bucket. But as long as you, there are some interesting variations here, right? So let's say I have a website which has a certain app ID. I've got a Windows Store app which has a certain app ID. If this is the same app ID and I've granted access once, I have an access token now, an OAuth access token. If I store it somewhere, let's say I store it within the Windows credential vault, then when I go to my website or when I go to a different app, as long as I've created both apps and I know where to look, I can try to see if I can see if I can get this scenario working. But it is not natively supported by the OS. Yeah, so the question is, once the user has logged into Facebook, then you should be able to cache those credentials. Yes, you've got the OAuth token, yes, you can do that, but that is only for your app. It becomes a security concern if another app can access that, so we don't allow that. I think the question is, do we have to manage storing the credentials, or is there an API? So if you use the storage vault, I believe storage vault might be called credential vault, we give you APIs for that. You essentially have a dictionary. You can say, this is my key, this is the string I want to store, and then you can store it. And that can also roam, I believe, as part of application data across your Windows 8 devices. So I log into one device, I go to my next device, which is a Windows 8 device, I get the same I get the same information within Credential Vault. I have access to that token there. Okay, good. Looks like everybody is still awake.
Ready to code?
Good. Okay, thank you so much. Really happy to see the interest in XAML C#. So do reach out to us if we can help you. Thank you.